This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know, giving you the tools to destroy corporate rule. Well, there's the theme song again. This is one of those mornings where it's such a beautiful morning here in Portland, Oregon. There's blue sky, which is, if you're a Portland resident, you know, is rather unusual. And, well, it's just also nice. And I thought, what a great time to stop for a coffee. There's plenty of time. thereby invoking Murphy's Law of traffic jam. So here I am. The big news today, and because big news is happening at the last minute, I've changed my my procedures here. Big news today is North Korea. Well, let me just read it from Cho Sang-hun's article in New York Times. North Korea threatened for the first time to launch a preemptive nuclear strike against the United States and South Korea. Yeah, no kidding. I mean, they say a lot of crazy stuff. And if you've listened to Press Watch over the years, my goodness, I've been doing it for a quarter century. You know that I have this sort of attitude towards North Korea. And the most important part of my attitude is, hey, those are people and don't blow them up. And the other part of my attitude is, you know, as an anarcho-socialist somewhere in the red range, these people are really embarrassing to me. I mean, it's really just a feudal state with Stalinist-Leninist trappings. And it's kind of, you know, I have to admit, it's kind of fun to make fun of them just because they're just outrageous. And then on the other hand, you know, the United States has cornered and caged those people for a long time and has most certainly exacerbated the situation. I mean, you know, you kind of make people a little bit upset when you bomb them so much as the United States did in the 50s General Curtis LeMay complained that there are no more targets left to bomb. I mean, just the place was just bombed flat, and so it is an armed camp. Anyway, returning to the news, threat from North Korea to launch a preemptive nuclear strike. Now, so one of the first things I did was pull up the Strat-4 naval update, which may or may not be complete. It's hard to say. But it's some information. It's rather hard to get information otherwise on what the U.S. Navy is doing. That's significant because generally if the U.S. is involved in putting up a pre-war set of provocations, et cetera, as the U.S. usually does, you know, take Iraq, for example, well, the Navy assembles its ships. And so I pulled up Strat-4's little map thinking that I would see a bunch of flat tops off North Korea. That's not the case. Looking at the Pacific carriers, the Nimitz, the Vinson, George Washington, John Stennis, and Ronald Reagan ships, and their associated vast armadas of ships, in order, the Nimitz is undergoing emergency repairs to its cooling pumps. That's important since it's a nuclear aircraft carrier, and you got to keep those things cool because they kind of go kablooey if you don't. The Carl Vinson has returned to home port. The George Washington is in its home port. That would be in Japan. The John C. Stennis, that's the newest one, by the way, the George Washington. John C. Stennis is conducting operations in the Fifth Fleet area. That's over in the Middle East. And Ronald Reagan is undergoing a maintenance period. So none of those Pacific carriers are off, and that's a little surprising, actually, to me. But, you know, a couple of them are down. So, but that leaves the so-called helicopter carriers. I wonder if anyone remembers how A U.S. legislator got sneered at for talking about U.S. helicopter carriers, and Fox News famously said, they don't exist. Ha, you don't know what you're talking about. I'm sorry, but they exist, and they are called the Peleliu, the Wasp, the Essex, the Kearsarge, the Boxer, the Bataan, the Bonhomme Richard, the Iwo Jima, and the Makan Island. Now, each of those carries thousands of Marines, also helicopters, and those VTOL planes, the name of which escapes me right now. And each one of those comes with, just a whole war. each of those can launch just one hellacious war. That's where your money goes, if you wonder. Well, actually, the Bonhomme Richard, which is based in Sasebo, Japan, is underway. The little map shows it heading for pretty much North Korea. So, that's different. If I thought that North Korea were reacting because of U.S. plan to actually, go for broke and destroy it, I would expect to see those flat tops. So I'm kind of thinking that things have escalated a little beyond what the U.S. was expecting. That's just my guess there. Based on, 25 years of following U.S. imperialism and railing against it. So here's some more news. Once again, repeating the news, because it is significant. I mean, even though North Korea really doesn't have the capacity to move its small nuclear weapons, this is the first time the U.S. has been threatened with nukes openly in my memory. Of course, there was the threat of the so-called balance of power, the madness of the Cold War, but this is different. This is saying you're going to get it. Returning to the New York Times article, the threat from the North Korean Foreign Ministry came hours before the UN Security Schedule, United Nations Security Council was scheduled to meet on the sanctions, which are aimed at squeezing the international financing of North Korea. I had to edit that for propaganda. And departing from that text, the sanctions have gone through. Calling such sanctions an act of war, North Korea has sharply escalated its threats against the U.S. and its allies in the last few days, declaring the 1953 armistice that stopped the Korean War null and void and threatening to turn Washington and Seoul into a sea of flames with lighter and smaller nukes. Departing from the New York Times once again, they really don't have lighter and smaller nukes. That's just talk. They do have smaller nukes. They don't have that much fissionable material. And it really takes sort of like missiles, the technology for developing reliable nuclear weapons, there's a phrase, is expensive. You just have to either have a design in hand that, works, or you have to figure out your own design. And it comes down to compressing the nuclear material into that hypercriticality of the nuclear explosion. That's not very lightweight. I would say, from all the information that's come out over the years about North Korea, that probably they would have, at this point, a usable nuclear mine. So, in other words, say the USS Bonhomme Richard and its associated flotilla of ships were to sail over to North Korea, then attack a beach. Well, one of these mines could be used to clear the beach of U.S. Of Marines. The Bonhomme Richard is part of a Marine Expeditionary Unit, often referred to as a MEU, and they could launch thousands of people towards the North Korean coast. However, that's always been crazy because North Korea has assembled more artillery per square mile than even the Nazis had at D-Day. I mean, they have really got a gigantic amount of artillery. And the artillery is really the main threat at this point from North Korea. They haven't had the money to bring their military technology, for the most part, into the 21st century. They have some strange things like plastic submarines, which you may have heard of. And they've been mobilizing those and everything else in response to these gigantic war exercises that the U.S. Conducts along with South Korea. And when I say gigantic, I mean there's 10,000 South Korean troops and 3,000 U.S. troops. And there's just all kinds of people out there milling around doing military things. And so North Korea is also doing an exercise. And now we have this ratcheted up rhetoric. And it is important to note that there's a new leader in North Korea, Kim Jong-un, the young un, as I like to call him. And I kind of hate to say this because the U.S. is always saying, oh, that dictator and that totalitarian society, and they're crazy. Well, you know, it actually applies to North Korea. it is grotesquely totalitarian. I don't like to throw that around so much either. I mean, we've got to remember that we live in a nation that sets a world record for imprisoning people. We've just gotten used to it. But if you don't look absolutely legitimate, which is to say, you know, white male and in pinstripes, you really have to fear the police in this nation. And so when we say that North Korea is totalitarian, well, they don't have as many people proportionately or in numbers in jail as we do. And then on the other hand, I would say living in North Korea is definitely a kind of jail. None of that excuses a war, which I do fear at this point. The thing that I really worry about at this point is that Kim Jong-un will give the order to pull the lanyards on the artillery aimed at Seoul. More on that in just a minute. Now, finishing off the New York Times article talking about the news of today that North Korea has threatened nuclear war. They write, the combative country had often warned that it had the right to launch preemptive military strikes against the United States, which it claimed was preparing to start a war on the Korean Peninsula. Gee, why would they think that? On Thursday, it, meaning today, ratcheted up its hostile language by talking about preemptive nuclear strikes for the first time, citing the continuing joint American-South Korean military exercises as proof that the United States and its allies were preparing for a nuclear war aimed to mount a preemptive strike on North Korea. Quoting official news agency, now that the U.S. is set to light a fuse for nuclear war, the Revolutionary Armed Forces of the DPRK, that's North Korea, will exercise the right to a preemptive nuclear attack to destroy the strongholds of the aggressors and to defend the supreme interests of the country, end quote. And so, ugly, huh? And that's where it's at. Now, a little background, this is from ChinaDaily.com. Watch out, you pull up China Daily and a number of the Chinese sites. You really need to have your antivirus stuff on. Under the category, appeal for talks after Pyongyang says it plans to nullify armistice. And for those of you who haven't expanded your horizons beyond public school, Pyongyang is the capital of North Korea. The United Nations is expected to vote on Thursday on a resolution imposing tougher sanctions on Pyongyang following its third nuclear test. Analysts urged a restart to negotiations to ease tension on the Korean Peninsula after the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, DPRK, announced on Tuesday it will nullify the Korean War armistice. During a closed-door meeting in New York on Tuesday, U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Susan Rice, recirculated the draft text of a resolution proposed by the U.S. to the other 14 members of the Security Council and departing from the China Daily text there. That is the resolution that has been approved. Rice told reporters after the meeting that DPRK will be subject to some of the toughest sanctions imposed by the United Nations. Li Baodong, China's permanent representative to the UN, said China will support action by the Council so long as it is proportionate and balanced. Yu Xiaohua, director of the Department for Asia-Pacific Security and Cooperation Studies within the China Institute of International Studies, said the proposed sanctions display the resolve of the international community, but they may not deter Pyongyang. Quoting her, to some extent, the draft resolution may hinder further nuclear tests, but it will not prompt Pyongyang to abandon its nuclear strategy and may in turn actually stimulate Pyongyang further. End quote. Security Council already imposed sanctions in response to North Korea's nuclear tests in 06 and 09, and the DPRK conducted a nuclear test on February 12th. Beijing called on Wednesday for calm and restraint in response to Pyongyang's vow to nullify the armistice signed in 53. No peace treaty has been signed between the DPRK and the Republic of Korea. Foreign spokeswoman Hua Chun Ying said, in the long term, we believe that a peace mechanism should replace the armistice. So skipping down in the article a little bit, the South Korean military warned on Wednesday that it will retaliate against North Korea if it takes any provocative action. According to Kim Jong-hyun, Army Major General at South Korea Joint Chiefs of Staff, a two-month field training exercise called Full Eagle was launched on March 1st with 10,000 U.S. soldiers and 200,000 South Korean troops. And actually, that's the correct numbers, and I apologize for getting the numbers wrong just a moment ago. Returning to the article, a computer simulated war game called Key Resolve will be held between March 11th and 21st, involving 10,000 South Korean troops and 3,500 U.S. soldiers. Once again, departing from the article, North Korea has warned that that exercise is particularly pugnacious in their view, and they want an absolute stop to it. So there's more to that than just a computer simulated war game. Not sure exactly what is up with it. Now, turning to The Telegraph from Britain, telegraph.co.uk, newsreader on North Korean state television, read out a statement issued by the country's foreign ministry entitled Second Korean War is Unavoidable, and accused Washington of pushing to start a nuclear war against North Korea, and said the country would exercise its right to a preemptive nuclear attack to destroy the stronghold of the aggressors. A crowd gathered outside Pyongyang's main railway station to watch the broadcast on Thursday evening, and quoting a local man in North Korea, "We can resolutely retaliate against our enemies, achieve national reunification, and turn the United States and South Korea into a sea of flames," end quote. Actually, the article in The Telegraph came with video, which shows the poor guy turning to read from a script. Anyway, although North Korea boasts of nuclear bombs and preemptive strikes, is not thought to have mastered the ability to produce a warhead small enough to put on a missile capable of reaching the U.S., is believed to have enough nuclear fuel, however, for a handful of crude nuclear devices. And that's the end of the Telegraph article, and actually I agree with that assessment pretty much. Continuing with this breaking news that North Korea has threatened nuclear war. And once again, I really don't think that they can do much damage with their nukes or that they will even likely use them. But there's a matter of the artillery. Now, the artillery is mounted in the mountains north of Seoul. And this is such a problem that the U.S. troops have been moved out of Seoul, out of range of that artillery. However, the population of Seoul is not out of range of the artillery. And presumably, if North Korea decided to just go for full-out war again, pardon me, they would start with an artillery bombardment of Seoul and of military emplacements in the area, which is just unthinkable because there are so many long-range artillery tubes in the mountains that they, you know, when they say Sea of Flames, well, it would be pretty much like that. They can set capital of South Korea on fire. I'm a little worried that they might. Hence, I have changed the topics for today's show, and I'm concentrating on North Korea. Returning to Yonhap News, article by Kim In-jung, North Korea has started submarine drills and stepped up preparations for nationwide military exercises, timed to coincide with the annual joint drills by South Korea and the United States. Military sources said Wednesday the latest move came as Pyongyang has ratcheted up its hostile rhetoric against Seoul and Washington as the two allies last week launched a two-month field training exercise called Full Eagle. Separately, joint forces will conduct computer-simulated drills named Key Resolve from March 11th through 21st. On Tuesday, Pyongyang threatened to scrap the 1953 armistice that ended the Korean War, citing tensions over South Korean U.S. joint military exercises and the United Nations' move to impose sanctions for its February 12th nuclear test. And now I invite your calls. You are listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland, the news you're not supposed to know. I'm Teresa Mitchell. The number to call, 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. My question to you, how do we stop this? How do we stop this? And I ask you, as a fellow citizen of a rabidly imperialist nation, nothing we have tried, nothing we anti-war people, anti-imperialist people, have tried over the last decades has stopped the juggernaut of the United States in provoking and conducting wars. I do blame the U.S. for the situation in North Korea. These exercises have been conducted every year. The sanctions have been on and off every year. These sanctions can be pretty cruel on the population. Notwithstanding the occasional small drop of food to North Korea, the U.S. has constantly and cruelly provoked this nation, which, as I mentioned at the outset, bombed North Korea into dust in the 50s. This was a war that the history of this war is little known in the United States. This is a war conducted with white phosphorus, with napalm, with jet strikes against a nation that had no jets, of course. You know, that's traditional for the U.S., I guess. On the ground, it was conducted by U.S. troops armed with flamethrowers, much as they were used against the people of Japan. And even there are accounts even of prisoner of war camps being wiped out with flamethrowers during that ugly, ugly war. Of course, you know, no war is pretty, I guess. But it's been, you know, more than half a century now. And the threats have never stopped. And the threats have always come in the context of that genocidalist war. Number to call, 503-231-8187. Returning to Yonhap News. A statement by the North's military said the armistice will be completely nullified from March 11th when key resolve gets into full swing in the south, warning a precise strike at any time. So we have that date, March 11th. Today is the 7th, so that's 4 days from now. Extremely ugly situation. A quote of military source, North Korea's submarines have entered military maneuvers in the Yellow Sea and East Sea. This year's winter drill was more intense than in past years, and artillery exercises tripled, end quote. When President Park Geun-hye was sworn into office on February 25th, and I apologize for mispronouncing that name, North Korea's artillery unit carried out firearm training targeting the South Korean capital, Seoul. He said that would be the artillery I was talking about that is dug into the mountains. The North will start large-scale drills across the nation from next week when South Korean and U.S. troops start the two-week war game. Another military source said that, asking for anonymity, a large-scale firearm drill, meaning artillery, will be held near the eastern coastal city of Wonsan, while nationwide military maneuvers will be carried out. I'm just going to go back and forth from this text, so forgive me for that, please, but the artillery also is effective against the, you know, potential landing sites. And so I can't imagine that the USS Bonhomme Richard and its associated military expeditionary unit are actually considering the possibility of landing there. It would be if they did, because of the artillery coming down. You know, this is the 21st century, and the U.S. War fighting capability is just amazing and horrifying. But aside from cruise missiles and HARM anti-radiation missiles, let's see, that's a little confusing. I mean, HARM anti-radar missiles. They're called anti-radiation missiles, but they mean microwave radiation from radars. And the whole warfighting capability, the fact is you can't land a bunch of Marines on a beach that's constantly blowing up. So I don't really think that's going to happen. If it does, ugh. Returning to the text, according to multiple military sources, the North has recently declared a no-fly zone in the west and the east of the Korean Peninsula during the May 11th through 20th Key Resolve training. They really hate this Key Resolve training thing, fueling speculation that it may fire off missiles. Seoul's defense ministry declined to comment. In the past, Pyongyang had declared the no-fly zones before it fired short-range missiles or conducted maritime firing drills. As North Korea's Army, Navy, and Air Force are preparing large-scale artillery training near Wonsan, the no-fly zone may be aimed at maritime or air firing drills, a third source said, but we don't exclude possibility of a missile launch. In response to the North's latest military movement, South Korea has stepped up its military readiness and surveillance to counter any North Korean provocations during the training period. according to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. In a statement, the South Korean military on Wednesday said that if the North provokes the South again, it will strongly and sternly punish the North Korean leadership, not to mention the origin of the provocation and its supporting forces. Quoting, if North Korea goes ahead with provocations and threatens the lives and safety of South Koreans, our military will strongly and sternly retaliate against the command and its supporting forces. Statement was read by Army Major General Kim Yong-yun, a senior official at Joint Chiefs of Staff, in a press conference. He also said, we want to make it clear that our military has made all preparations to do that, end quote. Now, this comes in the context of North Korea launching artillery against a South Korean island, which you may recall sometime in the last couple of years. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I changed the topic. I was going to talk about Cesar Chavez, who's dead of a galloping cancer. And I had some details about who Cesar Chavez was and what effect he has had. And so I think perhaps next week I'll get to the details about galloping viruses, oncoviruses, which the U.S. has developed. When you hear the rumor that perhaps people think that Cesar Chavez was attacked with a U.S. bioweapon, I would argue that it is plausible, and I'll bring that information next week. Now, stay tuned, please, for Parafoggering on KBOO Portland and more of the incomparable Radio Zine.
Is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New mobile applications available for iPhone and Android. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
The Community for Earth and Economic Justice Action Group and Alliance for Democracy will screen Bitter 70 on March 8th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue. In 2008, University of Utah economics student and Unitarian Universalist Tim DeChristopher committed an act which would redefine patriotism in our time. Follow Tim, Bitter 70, from college student to incarcerated felon. He bid millions of dollars he didn't have to save thousands of pristine acres of land surrounding U.S. national parks. KBOO Community Radio is a proud media sponsor of this film screening. More information can be found at kboo.fm/bitter70film2013.
KBOO Community Radio turns 45 this year, and our first 2013 membership drive starts on the 21st. Help make reaching our $99,000 fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matches are really great motivators to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to offer a match or have any questions. Or call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your spring drive matching gift today.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagrang, and the show is Fight the Empire. In the past, we've talked a lot about the end of cheap oil, and we've talked about it as a kind of a planetary issue that affects us all. But it also has its local impact, and one of them would be the Columbia River crossing. And so our guest today is Joe Courtwright, who is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He's the chair of the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors and the president of Impressa, a consulting firm here in Portland. So, Joe Courtwright, welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Paris. Good to be here.
Well, you wrote a very interesting article. It was in the Oregonian a couple of weeks ago, all about the Columbia River crossing. And I guess where should we start? Just start with the total cost. Is $3.4 billion they're going to spend on this thing?
Well, $3.4 billion is the price tag. The total cost is going to be a lot higher for a variety of reasons. That doesn't include the operating and maintenance cost. And it's proposed to be constructed as a toll bridge, so that means that we'll pay tolls and the cost of collecting those tolls for an indefinite period of time, as well as the interest on billions of dollars that they'll borrow. So the total cost is some multiple of that price tag. And the other thing I'd say is the evidence of these large highway construction projects, these so-called mega projects, is they almost always come in over budget. And for billion-dollar bridge projects around the world, the average cost overrun is something on the order of 30%, which in the case of this project would be another $1 billion to the price tag.
Wow. So over four $4 billion then.
In all likelihood, yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow. And the Oregon legislature voted they approved a $450 million contribution to this.
Well, what they did is they authorized some borrowing.
Uh-huh.
There's no additional revenue, so what they're saying is we would take money that would otherwise be available for construction projects or road repair.